Recording has begun. You may begin.
Hi, this is part of the IBM Virtualization Engine Deep Dive Education Sessions. There may be several other presentations in the area of interest. This presentation is entitled LPAR CPU Management, and my name is Rowan Dawkins, your presenter. There will be a question and answer call in early October, so please send your questions to Maddie, that's M-A-D-D-I-E, at us.ibm.com by October 1st. Thank you. Now, to begin our presentation, I'm just going to jump right into slide number 2, our agenda. And here I'm just mentioning the topics we plan on covering today. So first we're going to go off and look at what's the motivation for managing CPU resource or any kind of resource across logical partitions. I'm going to then touch on an overview, give you an idea of what LPAR CPU management is all about. Then I'm going to go into what platforms and operating systems actually support the LPAR CPU management line item. After that, we're going to go off and get into a little bit more detail, take a look at what kind of workloads you can manage with this LPAR CPU management support. And then we're going to get even more detailed and look at what's actually involved in this function. After that, we're going to go off and look at the data that's required to do this kind of work and how the data flows from one area to the next. And then we're going to go into even more detail. So you see, as the presentation progresses, we get into a lot more detail of how LPAR CPU management works. So we don't really give you everything up front and, you know, bombard you with a lot of details. We kind of slowly progress into that. So we're going to look at how it works, and then close to the end, we kind of take a look at some of the externals from a user point of view, and then we have a demo that we've created to see, so you can get a first-hand look at LPAR CPU management in action. So moving on to slide number 3, what are the learning objectives with this presentation? Well, first and foremost, at the end of this presentation, you should be able to describe to someone how LPAR CPU management works. You should also be able to understand how to enable and disable the LPAR CPU management support, and you should also be able to enable and disable our LPAR CPU management algorithm tracing support. So moving on to slide number 4, what's the motivation for LPAR CPU management? And here we kind of depict a picture of a typical e-business environment where you have multiple tiers, multiple workloads flowing over these tiers. You have multiple operating systems, platforms at each tier. So now we have these questions, right? When a performance problem occurs, first of all, who knows, right? I mean, a performance problem can occur and it can continue for hours or days before, you know, an administrator finally finds out, you know, that something's wrong. And then once we know that a problem has occurred, then the other question is, what components of the environment are actually contributing to the problem? Right, because here we have multiple servers, multiple tiers, multiple operating systems. So, you know, it's a difficult question to answer. And the next question that comes to mind is, what workloads are actually impacted by the problem? And then once we figure that out, then, well, we're going to want to fix the problem. So then the next question would be, what is the root cause of the problem? So that's sort of kind of the motivation behind all this. And these are the kinds of questions that EWLM and EWLM resource management and LPAR CPU management is trying to address and trying to answer. So moving on to slide number 5, just to give you a little overview of this LPAR CPU management support, It's basically LPAR processor resource management in EWM release version 2, release 1, based on our EWM domain policy. Now, in this LPAR CPU management score, you can have multiple partition groups on the same piece of hardware. You can have a mixture of operating systems in that same partition group. As we see here depicted in the picture, we have a group here with three AIX operating systems. We have a Linux operating system. We have an i5 OS operating system, all in the same group, which is in the same squadron box. Now, this support only applies to shared processor partitions only. So we do not manage dedicated partitions. And also, you can have multiple EWM domains on the same physical hardware. Right? So you could have different groups belonging to different domains. Okay, moving on to slide number 6. And just to give you an idea of what platform and operating systems LPAR CPU management is supported on. It's supported on AIX 5L version 5.3 with a certain amount of maintenance. i5 OS v5.3 plus some additional PTFs that are described in our Info Center. It's also available in PPC Linux, SUSE SLED 9, Service Pack 2, plus some of the RPMs which are also described in the Info Center. So for more information, you can go into the Info Center, and I have a point to that later on in the presentation. Okay, now moving on to slide number 7, we're going to begin to take a look at what kinds of workloads do we or can we actually manage with this line item. And the first one we're going to look at is this ARM instrumented middleware type of workload. So in this ARM instrumented middleware type of workload, you know, we could have multiple hops for each hop in a multi-tier application environment is managed based on its overall contribution, you know, to the response time. Now, our understanding of the application topology will allow us to put, you know, the local performance that we see on a particular node or hop or server within the context of the end-to-end goal. And in this way, we don't allow poor performance in, say, one partition to be sort of hidden or obscured by a very good performance in other partitions that may be on those same set of hops. Moving on to slide number 8, the other type of workload we manage with this LPAR CPU management support is individual operating system processes. So in this type of workload, you classify individual operating system processes to service classes, and then we manage those processes based on the goals that are assigned to these service classes. Now, you got to be careful here, because this kind of approach does add some complexity, because before you can do this effectively, you need to understand the role of these individual processes in your policy. And it's also worth mentioning that this kind of approach is usually best for partitions that are running a mixed non-ARM instrumented workload. So if in a particular partition you have several processes that are non-ARM instrumented and are running, doing different kind of work, like one might be maybe doing like run some batch jobs, another may be doing some stock quotes, and let's say they're not ARM instrumented, so you may have to assign each of these processes to different service classes to achieve that. The other workload we're going to look at on page number 9 is we can also manage workloads at the partition level. And how this happens is the entire partition is given a velocity goal, and then we manage that partition based on how well that partition is being treated by the hypervisor. And this kind of workload is usually best for partitions that's running a single primary workload. So it's running a homogeneous kind of workload as opposed to when you had individual OS processes that may be running a heterogeneous type of workload. So this is more suited for partitions that are running a homogeneous type of workload which have a single business importance. And obviously it's less complex than individual OS processes because it's a homogeneous workload and you don't, you know, you set one goal as opposed to multiple. And just a matter of note here, we sometimes refer to this, to managing this type of workload as ERD or EWLM Resource Director. Okay, moving on to slide number 10, we're going to get a little bit more in-depth now and talk about what's involved with this LPAR CPU management line and like what exactly are we doing to achieve our goals. So the first thing we do is we manage CPU resource across partitions, right? So we move resources dynamically to where it's needed to meet goals set in the policy, and we move them away from partitions that may not necessarily need those resources at that time. And I mean, we could get into a situation where we can't really satisfy everyone. And if that's the case, then we look at basically sacrifice the least important work. So the partitions running the least important work will move resources away from those, and you know, and if necessary, make them miss their goals if we need those resources to make more important service classes that are running other partitions meet their goals. So that's the most important piece of the support. The other piece is optimizing the number of virtual processors. Right, what I mean by this is we adjust the number of virtual processors based on that partition's entitled capacity and how much CPU is actually consuming. And the goal here is to ensure that a partition is not held back because it doesn't have enough virtual processors. And we also need to make sure that it doesn't suffer too much overhead because it has too many virtual processors. So we try to maintain the number of virtual processors within a certain range there and optimize it that way. The other piece that's involved in this support is optimizing the weight of the partitions in the group. And what we do here is we adjust each partition's weight based on what its entitled capacity is and how much CPU it's actually consuming. And this actually is only applicable to partitions that are uncapped, so they're able to take advantage of capacity in the free pool. So we optimize the weight of the partitions in the group. And the last major piece that's involved here is maintaining the defined capacity of the group. So basically, when you configure your partitions and you give each partition a desired capacity, and if some of those desired capacity make up what the defined capacity of the group is. And the goal of EWLM is to not change that defined group capacity. So basically, we will not take resources from outside the group. So all resource actions happen within the group. So if we need to increase the amount of resource on a particular partition, then there's a corresponding decrease on another partition within that same group. And if it somehow happens that we have spare capacity in the group or extra capacity, which may happen if we had some kind of error along the way, then there's a redistribution that happens to take care of that. Now moving on to slide number 11, we're going to take a look at what kind of data is required to do this management and also look at how this data gets moved around. So first on this chart we have, over on our left-hand side, we have our ARM instrumented applications and our non-ARM instrumented applications. And through them, the platforms aggregate information like the samples and the transaction statistics and so on and so forth. So the platform aggregates this information, and periodically the managed server, the EWM managed server, will retrieve these statistics from the platform. All right, so we need the process samples to understand how the process behaves. And we need the transaction statistics to understand okay, how many transactions is this server processing? What kind of response time is it experiencing, and so on and so forth. Now, we also need this other piece of information, which is what's the entitled capacity of this partition? How much CPU are we actually consuming? So all that information goes into the management algorithms. Now, after getting all that information, we send to the domain manager over on the right here. So each partition, or each managed server on each partition, will send to the domain manager its local data. And I'm not showing all the data that gets sent back and forth here. I'm just concentrating on that piece of data that's used by this LPAR CPU management support. So the managed server will send the local hop level response time and transaction counts to the domain manager periodically. And the domain manager will aggregate this information and periodically send out a message back to the managed server, which contains the global hop level response time and transaction counts, and two, it will also send the end-to-end response time and transaction counts. Now, what's the purpose of this? Well, the global hop level response time and transaction counts lets the managed server know how well he is performing relative to other servers that are in the same tier. Right, and the end-to-end response time and transaction counts allows this managed server to know if I make a change on my system, what kind of impact is that going to have on the end-to-end statistics that we're receiving. So at a high level, that's sort of how that information gets used. Now moving on to slide number 12. Now we're really getting into it here. We're going to look at how a receiver is selected. Now when I say receiver, I mean a receiver service class. And this happens at the partition. So on a particular partition, a managed server is running, and periodically it's going to look and see, okay, is there anyone currently missing goals? All right, so it's going to look for the highest important service class that's missing goals. If there are no service class missing goals, then it's fine. It doesn't do anything. However, if there is a service class missing a goal on that partition, then it asks the question, is CPU a bottleneck? Right, and if CPU is not a bottleneck, then obviously it doesn't make sense to increase the CPU resource on this partition, because it's not going to help anything. So if CPU is not a bottleneck, we go back, we look for the next highest receiver that we can help. However, if CPU is a bottleneck, then we're going to see, can this partition be helped? Right, and we basically ask the question, is there enough value to justify a LPAR CPU resource action? And the reason for that is we don't want to continuously have these small movements, right? So for each movement we make, there's a certain threshold that's set, and each resource action that we take has to satisfy a certain threshold. So if there isn't sufficient value, then we go back and look for somebody else to help. If there is, however, then the managed server is going to send a request to the domain manager asking for more resources. And we're going to take a look at the domain manager portion of this. So this, on this slide page, so this all happens in the managed server. So now we're going to take a look at what the domain manager does on slide number 13. So starting over on the left-hand side here, we have, let me just explain this diagram a little bit. Over on the left here, that's our receiver partition. So that's the guy that we were just looking at on slide number 12. So the receiver RO and the receiver VA, those are components, either one of the components that are both in this receiver partition. In the middle here, we have the domain manager, And over on the right, we may have one or more potential donor partitions that are in that particular group. All right, so we pick it up on over here on the left in the receiver oral section. So at this point, that managed server has determined that it needs to ask for more LPAR resources. So what it does is it's going to then send a message to the virtualization agent, which is this VA, on his partition, asking for more help. Now this, it may look like this VA component isn't doing much, but his purpose is, for the most part, is to insulate this RO or this resource optimizer guy from different virtual server environments, if you will. So you could potentially swap this entire VA guy out and then put in someone for, so you can manage ZVM types of partitions or VMware types of partitions, right? So there's a specific implementation depending on the environment we're in. So eventually this plea for help gets sent to the domain manager, who's going to then send what we call an assessment request to every other logical partition in the group. Right, so this all happens in one outburst. So it already knows what all the other partitions in the group is. So it sends out an assessment request message to all of them. And it's basically asking them, it's basically saying, okay, or the domain manager knows, we have a partition here that's asking for this many resources. So now I'm asking you, the other partitions in the group, what's going to be the impact to you if you were to give up some of your CPU resources? And the way it works is it doesn't ask each other partition for the maximum. It breaks it up into smaller chunks. So let's say the receiver partition was asking for, say, you know, half of a CPU, for instance. And the domain manager would then do something like ask each of the donors, okay, what would be the impact to you if we took away, you know, 10% of our CPU, 20% of our CPU, 30%, 40%, 50%. So it breaks it up into smaller chunks, and that enables it to better distribute the impact around, so no one partition gets really hurt too much. So it sends a assessment request to the donor partitions, who's going to then make the assessment and then send back a response to the domain manager. And the domain manager is going to receive all these responses, and it's going to calculate what we've termed a net value. Now, the net value is a little bit more involved than what I've shown here, and the net value doesn't always turn out to be true. So there may not be value in making this resource adjustment. So the net value is going to look at, okay, what's the impact or what's the improvement of the receiver, and look at what's going to be the impact to the other partitions. You know, it looks at what are the importance levels and so on and so forth, and it's going to come to some kind of decision as to whether or not to grant the request. If it doesn't decide to grant the request, then it immediately sends a failure response back to the partition that sent the request. However, if it does decide to grant the request, then it's going to send out, you know, after this point, it's already decided how it's going to distribute the impact across all the other donor partitions. Then it sends out a request to all those donor partitions asking them to first reduce their capacity. And the reason we do this is because since we don't want to, you know, we can't bring the capacity of the group higher than what has been defined. So we first ask the donor partitions to reduce their capacity. And upon the donor partitions reducing their capacity successfully, then we send the request to the receiver, the partition that sent the request initially, asking him to increase his capacity. So he increases capacity, the component that sent the request will get a response, he'll make some updates, and then that partition will send a response back to the domain manager saying, okay, capacity increase was successful. so I mean that's basically how the donors get selected, or how the flow works once we decide we're going to send the request out. Now we're moving on to slide number 14. So now we know how FRC CPU management works in a nutshell. And we're going to take a look at some of the externals. So these are the things that a user is going to have to know, is going to have to do, they're going to have to know how to set, how to use, and so on and so forth. So the externals here we're going to look at first are these partition settings. So these are settings that you set on the partition itself. So it's sort of external to even EWLM, but it has an impact on what EWLM can and cannot do. So for instance, the min and max CPU entitled capacity. So first and foremost, we manage CPU across LPARs by changing their entitled capacity. So if you set a min for a partition, that means that we can't bring the partition down below what you set, even though there may be value to that action, because the user has said that, you know, this partition can't go below this capacity, then we won't be able to do the action. Same thing applies on the max side. We may have a partition that may benefit from more CPU resources, but if the max is set too low, then we may not be able to do that action. So some consideration needs to be taken when setting these min and max CPU entitled capacity, because it does limit EWLM actions. The other setting is this initial CPU entitled capacity. And the reason this is important is because the sum of these values for those partitions in the group make up the defined group capacity. And the total capacity in the group can never go above that amount. So again, if you set your initial CPU entitled capacity, let's say if you set it too low, even though your max capacity on any particular partition may be very high, in the total of your initials may be very low, and then that would also limit what EWLM could do. So some consideration needs to be taken there when setting this value. The other one we're going to look at is the virtual CPUs, the min and max settings. Again, this affects what EWLM can do, because since we try to optimize the number of virtual CPUs based on the type of workload that we're seeing, you know, if you set a min that's too high or max that's too low, you know, it may run into trouble, it may limit what EWLM can do. So again, you know, careful consideration needs to be taken there. The other setting is this LPAR group number. Now, the group number is what enables EWLM to essentially group particular partitions together. So, you know, you go into HMC or wherever and you see, okay, these partitions A, B, C or whatever are going to belong to this group, and you set a group number there. And that's the scope of EWLM's management. So if you have a set of partitions that you would like EWLM to manage as a group, then you assign them the same group number, and then that management will occur. Okay, moving on to slide number 15, we're going to take a look at some of the controls, the panels you may see in the control center, are some of the new panels to support the LPAR CPU management line item. So the first panel we're going to look at is this partition groups. And I believe this panel has been renamed to just partitions. Here it shows as partition management, but I believe it's now just partitions. And what this panel shows you is a list of all the groups that EWLM knows about. And this is not only groups on the same machine. This is groups in your domain. So you have groups on several machines. For instance, here you look, you'll see that the group number for the first entry and the third entry are the same. Right. So essentially, those are two different machines. And there is also help on these panels to help explain some of these other values. So, you know, the machine identifier here, that's a machine ID that gets back from, what we get back from our EWM query. We query the operating system to get that information, and then that gets sent over to the domain manager. You know, we have the group number here, which I just explained previously, which you set on each partition. We have a processor utilization, which gives you an idea of how much of the physical processors on that box is this group using. You know, we have the processor allocation, which is, you know, how much of the physical processor is allocated to this group. Okay, and I kind of got my slides out of order here, so I'm going to jump from slide number 15 down to slide number 18 before we come back to 16. Okay, so I'm going to jump from slide number 15 to slide number 18 and take a look at the partition group details panel. So basically, from your list of partitions, you can select one of those partitions and say, okay, I want to see details about this. You can select one of those groups and say, I want to see the details about this group. And then this is the sort of panel you would see. So here we see a list of all the partitions that are in that group. We see the weight for each partition, and the weight is what determines how much of the free pool this partition will or can consume if it needs to. You know, we see how many virtual processors are online for this partition. We see how many physical processors are in the box. And we see a processor utilization, which gives an idea of how much of the physical processors are being used by each particular partition. We see this processor allocation here. These are in units multiplied by 100. So 75, that's 0.75 of a processor. That's the entitled capacity. 55, that would be 0.55 of a processor. So this processor allocation column, that's actually your entitled capacity. So this panel is showing you information about each partition here, whether it's capped or uncapped. What's the minimum capacity, with a maximum capacity, minimum entitled, maximum entitled, and so on and so forth. So all those externals on the partition settings that I described earlier are displayed here for easier viewing. Okay, so from slide number 18, I'm going to jump back a couple of slides to number 16, where I'm going to take a look at this partition service class. So when I was talking about the types of workloads that are managed, I mentioned this that you can set a goal for an entire partition and we'll manage that entire partition according to that goal. However, in order to do that, you need to define a new type of service class, a service class which is new in version 2 release 1 support, which we call a partition service class. So when you go to define the service class, you'll specify type partition. Goal type can be velocity or discretionary. You'll specify the importance, and you'll specify the level, be it fast or slow or slowest, you know, so on and so forth. So it's similar to a velocity service class. And moving on to slide number 17. After you define your partition service class, you've got to define the rules, essentially, for what should map to that service class, or what partition should be assigned that service class goal. And we've defined a new class similar to a to a transaction class and a process class, which we've called a partition class. And this partition class, you define a rule. So we have one rule here, which is a host name rule. So if you have a partition with this host name, then it's going to be assigned this web server partition service class. Okay. So that's our partition class. And before I go on, I should also note that there are no restrictions against having multiple sort of or work running in multiple service classes in the same partition. Right. So you could have work running you could define a partition class for a partition, and you can also have ARM instrumented work running on that same partition. And to go even further, you could also have, non-instrumented, work also running on that particular partition. So they're not mutually exclusive. You can have multiple kinds of work running on a partition, even if the partition has a partition class, and we'll manage each service class accordingly. So if the ARM instrumented work is missing goals, we'll ask for help based on that. If the partition in a whole is missing goals, we'll ask for help based on that, and so on and so forth. Okay, so now I'm going to jump from slide number 17 down to slide number 19. And this panel is basically how you enable and disable LPAR CPU management support. So you enable and disable this support from the control center. And so it's very simple. You go to the domain settings, you say, click on EWM management, and to enable support, you just select the checkbox and say okay, or to disable, you unselect the checkbox and you click okay, and that's pretty much it. Now slide 20, we're going to look at another external, the algorithm tracing. The purpose of this is to capture resource management actions and the decisions that we make in EWLM so we can be able to diagnose problems which occur in the field. And you can enable and disable tracing at the domain manager, or you can enable and disable it at the virtual group level. So you can be very selective about this. For instance, if you're only seeing problems on a certain partition or partitions or on a certain set of partitions in a group, then you could turn on tracing on that group as opposed to turning on tracing on every group in your domain. So it gets very selective. In slide number 21, this is just showing you how you turn on or turn off algorithm tracing at the domain manager. Again, you would go to your domain settings, and there's a serviceability link. And in the serviceability link, you can, you select the checkbox, log algorithm trace information, to turn it on at the domain manager, or you unselect it to turn it off. So this is how you would turn on or off algorithm tracing at the domain manager. Now I'm going to look at, on slide 22, how you would turn on tracing at the virtual group level. So again, you go to your domain settings, and you get into your serviceability panel. But then from that point, from your serviceability panel, you would go advanced. So it's on the advanced tab. So in the advanced tab, you should see, on the panel that comes up, you should see a list of all the partition groups that are in your domain, and then from there you can select whether or not you want to enable or disable algorithm tracing for that particular group. Okay, now we're close to the end of our presentation, so hopefully by now you have a good feel for what LPAR CPA management is all about. I'm just going to give you a little taste of LPAR CPA management in action with this demo here. Okay, so now clicking on the on this little woman with this knocking this thing together to launch the demo. And it's going to ask you, okay, do you want to open this file? You should say yes. And that's going to launch a new application, and it's going to run the demo in it. This demo was created by a colleague of ours for the VE announcement. So here I'm on EWM version 2 release 1 talking about the new features. I'm not going to go into this too much because I'm really only interested in the LPAR CPA management support. And right now I'm just waiting for it to go to the next slide. Okay, so now for this particular demo, we have an IBM eServer P5550. We have 4 physical processors, 16 gig of memory, and 2 72 gig disks. More importantly, we have 6 LPARs all running AIX, and they're all in the same group. Okay, for this demo, we're using WebSphere Trade 6. We have a 3-tier topology from IHS to WebSphere DB2. And each hop is on a separate LPAR, and you'll see what I mean by that later on. So we're running 2 streams of work. We got the gold stream, which is high importance. We got the silver stream. Okay, so a little bit more information on the 2 streams here. We've got on the silver stream going from LPAR 6 to 3 to 5, and the gold stream from LP4, LP2 to LP1. I'm just going to pause this demo a little bit since it's going a little bit too fast. So I'm back looking at the topology for these streams. So we've got the silver stream and we got the gold stream. So we see the 3-tier topology for each, from IHS, IBM HTTP server, to WebSphere, to DB2. Each hop for each stream is on a different partition. Each partition starts out with the same entirely capacity, 0.5, half of a CPU. Okay, and we should also note that all 6 of these partitions are in the same group, so they'll be able to do a lot of capacity redistribution as needed. Okay, I'm going to start back the demo. Now I'm looking at, and here we're just seeing the list of domain policies, and the Trade 6 policies is the policy we're deployed and the policy we're working with. Okay, so we're about almost 2 minutes into the demo. Okay, we're now looking at the service classes. We have the gold trade, which is that, so the gold is going to be classified to this service class, and the silver is going to be classified to the silver trade service class. Okay, I'm going to pause a little bit, about 2 minutes and 15 seconds into the demo. Here we're looking at, you know, just a little, the initial setup. We have listed all the managed servers, their processor utilization. Let's start this up again. So a lot of this here is now just the initial setup. Here we're showing this, here, this is the group. We're going to look at more details about this group. Okay, and here we just see more information. This is a partition group details panel I outlined before. So here we see all the partitions, their weights, the virtual processors, the entitled capacity. So all this information which I described previously, you know, we're just looking at what the initial setup here is for this demo. At this point, we're about 3 minutes into the demo. And once again, note that the gold service class is high importance and the silver is medium. So now we're gonna generate some workload that's gonna get classified to the silver service class. Okay, so let's do that. About 3 minutes, 36 seconds into the demo. And just so you know, the time on the demo is located on your bottom right-hand corner. So once you generated that silver workload, we see that the PI, the performance index of the silver trade, you know, it skyrockets pretty quickly, right? You know, it's at 21.81. So that's what happens once you start up work getting that silver workload. Okay, so about 4 minutes into the demo now, we're going to look at the application topology for the silver work. All right, so again, remember, it's a three-hop application. We have three tiers. You know, we have our web server, our first hop. You know, we've got WebSphere, WAS, the second hop. We got DB2 on the back end. And at 4 minutes 33 seconds into the demo, we're just doing a drill down into the topology so we can take a look at, you know, what are the different instances. And here we see DB2 has several instances running. Once we refresh the screen, we notice that the PI has jumped from, you know, about 21 down to about 8. And now we're going to take a look at what happened in our environment to enable that. Okay, so if you remember, let me back up a bit. So if you remember, we started out, at 5 minutes and 15 seconds into the demo. If you remember, we started, all the partitions were at an entitled capacity, which is the processing units were 0.5. And when we just took a look at, and when we started, the PI for the silver was at 21 point something. And we just took a look at the PI, and the PI was currently 8 point something. So what happened was we began shifting work over to the partitions, running that silver workload, so it can be better able to meet its goals. So you may or may not remember, but the silver work was being run on partitions ELMP5, LP6, LP3, and LP5. And if you look here, you see that all those partitions, except for 6, which probably doesn't have any CPU bottleneck, you see that all those partitions had their entitled capacity increased. And the other partitions, the gold ones that are supposed to be running the gold work, well, there's no gold work running right now, so we've taken resources away from those partitions so the silver work can be able to meet its goals. Okay, so I'm starting up a demo again. I'm at 5 minutes and 17 seconds. And by this point, you can see now the PI has dropped down to 0.9, so the silver work has begun to meet its goals. All right, and looking at this snapshot again, we see that some more shifting has occurred. You know, LP5's entitled capacity has gone from 0.5 to over 1, so his capacity has actually doubled. We have reduced capacity elsewhere in the silver work, but it appears that those partitions are not bottlenecked by CPU. So upon some further resource redistribution, we were able to bring the PI down to below 1, so we're now meeting our goals. We're now about 5 minutes and 40 seconds into the demo. not going to look at the hop details again for the silver work. On this panel, you can selectively pick which hops you want to look at, and you can pick what kind of data you want to see. Like here, we decided we only want to see, all three hops, and we say we want to see, you know, the response time data and the resource data, and that's what gets displayed on the panels. Okay, so now about 6 minutes and 40 seconds into the demo, after running the silver work and letting it stabilize, meaning the point where it starts to actually meet its goals, we can now take a look at what was the resource reallocations. Right, so we see here we moved a lot of capacity over to DB2, and if we go back a little bit to about 6 minutes and 34 seconds into the demo, you'll see that DB2, which was the last hop, hop 2, because it started hop 0, so DB2 was at the third hop, hop 2, it was the one experiencing the most processor delay. Right. So moving up a bit, we ended up shifting a lot of resources over to DB2. So in this case, DB2 was a bottleneck, and we shifted a lot of resources over there to enable the silver work to meet its goals. And you can also see we took resources from the other partitions, which currently aren't doing any work. So we also took some resources from them. So we didn't take a lot of resources from any one partition. We sort of, you know, distributed the impact of the total resource that we want to take across the other partitions in the group. Okay, starting up this demo again in about 6 minutes and 42 seconds. And now what we're going to do here is now the silver work has stabilized, so now we're going to start up some gold work. Now remember, the gold work is of higher importance, so now let's see what happens when we start up the gold work. So here we're just looking at the application topology for the gold work. About 7 minutes 48 seconds into the demo. And now we're doing a drill down into the topology. Okay, we're doing a drill down, looking at the actual processes for this processing the work for this application. We're now about 8 minutes and 40 seconds into the demo. And if we stop here for a second, go back. Okay, so we've noticed that about 8 minutes and 46 seconds into the demo, the PI for the gold work has basically skyrocketed. It's at 23. Right, so let's keep note of that. So restarting the demo now at 8 minutes and 46 seconds. Okay, so now this is what the group details look like currently. And here we begin to see some resource shifting starting to occur for LP4, LP2, and LP1. Already we see LP1 has gone up to 0.75, whereas previously it was at 0.3 something processing units. So already we're beginning to help the gold trade. And after some amount of help, we see PI has decreased dramatically to 9.61. Now we see PI down to 7.35, about 9 minutes and 15 seconds into the demo. So there's been some further resource shifting. Now, after further resource shifting, we realize that the gold service class has now begun to meet its goals. But you may also notice one other thing: the silver trade is now missing its goals. So what basically happened there is the gold trade service class, because it has higher importance and we can't satisfy both of them at the same time, meaning we can't find a resource combination which will allow both to meet their goals, then what happens is the lower importance work gets sacrificed in favor of the higher importance work. So we improve gold trade to the point where it's starting to meet its goals, even though the silver trade service class has now begun to miss its goals. Okay, starting again at 9 minutes and 40 seconds into the demo. Looking at its partition details, further resource action has happened, so we're shifting more work over to the gold trade service class. Shifting more resources to the gold trade service class, not work. Okay, so now 10 minutes and 8 seconds into the demo. So the work has now stabilized a bit, and this is a snapshot of what the entitled capacities look like. Right, so now the gold work, remember, we had taken away resources from the partitions processing the gold work initially to give to the silver, to give the partition processing the silver work. So now what we've done is we've moved some of those resources back to those partitions processing the gold work to allow the gold work to meet its goals. Notably, the DB2 partition in the gold topology, you'll notice that his entitled capacity, his processor allocated, has now gone up to 0.75, whereas before it was brought down to, I believe, 0.3 something. So he shifted back resources from silver to the gold partitions to enable it to meet its goals. So starting up the demo again at 10 minutes and 10 seconds. Okay, now at 10 minutes and 30 seconds into the demo, we're going to basically stop the gold work. Right, so we're going to stop all transactions getting classified to the gold trade service class. And here you see it doesn't have a PI, so we've stopped all those transactions. Now you see what immediately happens is all of a sudden the silver trade begins to meet its goals. Right, so as soon as work stopped running on the gold partitions, we started to move resources back so the silver could now meet its goals since it's not competing for resources. Okay, and now you can see we shifted some resources over to, in the silver work, over to the WebSphere tier, the ELMP5LP3. We bumped its antenna capacity up to now 0.53. We also bumped the capacity of the DB2 partition, ELMP5LP5, to 1.35. Okay, so that's basically the end of this particular demo. Just give you an idea of how LPAR CPU management actually works. I'm just waiting for the demo to finish here. Okay, so that's it for our demo. Moving now to slide number 24. This is just a list of places where you can go to get more information. There's an EWLM Red Book that's available on the Red Book site. There's a link here. You can also get information from the EWLM Information Center. We also have a link for that. If you want more general information on VE, which is a virtualization engine, there's also a website for that. And there's also now an EWLM class that deals with EWLM planning and implementation. So if you're involved in that kind of work, you may also want to check that out. Now, that's the end of my presentation. Thank you, and I hope it was informative and you found it informative and interesting. Thank you.